This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by theperfecttrick.com. If you're looking for the perfect trick and something that perhaps you can't find anyplace else, that's the place you should find it. In fact, if you have something that is an old magic trick that you would like to turn into cash magically, I'm sure that they would be interested in purchasing some of your gently used material that is something that might be considered as a collector's item. They do have several collector's items that are also available there, but you need to go and check them out at theperfecttrick.com. And right now, that if you just mention Word in the promo code, then you're going to get a 10% discount for listening to the Magic Word and hearing about it here. So again, whenever that you purchase something, upon checkout, put in the promo code Word, and you'll get a good discount. There you go. Well, this week I want to also welcome to the Magic Word someone who has decided that they've been listening for so long, they enjoyed it, and decided to also pledge a little bit of money towards our funds here in order to help offset and defray some of our costs. So I want to welcome Kevin Davis, who is the newest friend of the Magic Word. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you very much for joining our intimate group. And I say intimate because we still have a very small group compared to the number of listeners out there. But those of you who can't support us financially, if you can do something, that would be great. A couple of things. I know that you use Amazon.com to purchase things. And if you go to the MagicWordPodcast.com, there is a tab on the left-hand side that says Amazon Affiliate or something like that. When you click on that, there will be a link there within the body of that website page that you can click on. It will take you then over to Amazon. So that way that it embeds the code from the Magic Word. So as an affiliate, that we get a little bit of help also from everything that you purchase on Amazon. Doesn't have to be magic, doesn't matter what you're going to be purchasing, but some of the percentages of your sale will go to help the Magic Word. So thank you there very much. And also, if you happen to be listening on iTunes, that you can always help us out with a 5-star rating and comments that you can make over there. Well, enough of that and moving on. Let me just say that I'm excited that we're here at this somewhat of a milestone at 450 podcasts. Gosh, you know, starting back in, I don't know, when was that, March of 2011 or something? And so I've been doing this for a long number of years, and I appreciate each and every one of you listeners that we've been gaining, you know, one or two a week, you know, each week and little at a time, you know, kind of starts to gain some momentum. So I appreciate, I think we've got about 15,000 subscribers, which is pretty healthy, I think, considering the size of our magic community. And so, again, that by reaching this point of 450, I thought it was kind of important that we recognize it by having someone who is also legendary and someone who is well-known and somebody who had made a difference in our community, and that's Mr. Gene Anderson. I caught up with Gene Anderson when we were together at the IBM convention in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Amway Hotel. It was kind of interesting because he had told me he had worked in that hotel many years ago. Of course, he's from Michigan and has worked all over the state as well as all over the world. But he had some interesting stories in talking about what the hotel used to be like really in its heyday. So it was kind of interesting to sit in the same hotel that he was so familiar with. Gene Anderson, of course, has long been known as Mr. Newspaper Guy, and he's the one who invented the iconic torn restored newspaper effect, which most everybody has used in their act at one time or another, and some people make a mainstay. That was one of Doug Henning's favorite tricks, and in Gene Anderson's book that he has written, which is available, and I highly recommend that you get a copy of this, it includes that, and lots of stories, and also about his relationship then with Doug Henning and Gene Anderson. So Gene talks a lot about his relationship with Doug Henning and Debbie, and kind of how they developed, and other kinds of things. I mean, it's a phenomenal book, not only a book full of tricks that has been a real labor of love as he had been working on this book for so many years, but then also because of the great history and stories that are in there that gives the book a lot of texture, and you'll love it. So I recommend the book highly then as well. Even if I wasn't talking to Gene this week, I still would say go out and buy the book. So anyhow, Gene has, again, been around for a long time. He worked for Dow Chemical, and he was one who had written and delivered a lecture called Part-Time Professional. Had changed my perspective on how that I looked and performed magic, and has been influential in a lot of people's routines in their profession, and again, Doug Henning just being one of them. Well, I've said a lot on the front end over here. I really don't have to introduce him too much because you guys know him, and after hearing some of this podcast, you might love him even more. He's just a great guy, always got the broadest smile in the world, and always glad to see you, and whenever they talks with you, you're the only person in the room. I mean, he is just engaged in everything that you have to say, and just a lovely, lovely man in every respect, and I just have nothing but the highest regard for this man, and I'm sure that you do too. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Gene Anderson, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. Well, today we are welcoming one of my favorite people, I know one of yours also, who is a legend in magic and has been around for a long time. We could probably talk for a lot longer than we're going to today because of his varied history. And if I just say the word newspaper, who comes to mind in the magic community? But of course, Mr. Gene Anderson. There's so much to say as far as what we can talk about and the direction that we can go with this, as far as what that you have done and contributed to the magic community and people you've known and influenced, and about Doug Henning and others that, oh goodness, the directions that this could go. But I just wanted to say thank you for all that you have been doing for the magic community for so many years, and being involved in the things that you have contributed. And it's always great seeing at these conventions and FISM and every place else. So please welcome my friend, Mr. Gene Anderson.
Well, thanks, Scott. Fun to be here talking to you.
Yes, well, it's great. You know, we run into each other all the time, like at Factors and different places, and have a chance to sit down and break bread and at FISM and wherever else. And so of all the conventions you attend, is there one that really that you like? Is it FISM that you like best because the contest or what, and the IBM, SAM? I mean, sometimes you are performing there, and it's kind of like, I know, asking you who's your favorite child, but what is one of your favorite conventions?
Well, I can't answer that in a way.
Right.
My very first convention was at TAOM, mm-hmm. Texas Association of Magicians. I grew up in northern Minnesota. There weren't any conventions, so
right.
I didn't even go to a convention until I was in graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
So in one sense, at that era, Texas Association of Magicians was my favorite. Mm-hmm. That isn't what, you know, it's evolved since. And then I started going to, for example, FISM.
Right.
Well, and I haven't been to every one, and I'm not going to this one this year. So mm-hmm. if that was my favorite, I suppose I would have gone to Korea.
Right.
But I am not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's way over there, and I've traveled over to that end of the world, and I said, I don't want to sit in the plane that long, one thing.
Yeah, it's a long trip. Flight. Yeah,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah. So then there's others, and so I love Factors, but it, you know, that's just because you schmooze with buddies.
Right.
And I love all these conventions. I love when I'm working them. So I used to just go to conventions if I was working them.
Right.
Well, now I go to more than that because I kind of exhausted all of that, I suppose, maybe.
Right.
Not maybe, but.
You know, it was interesting because you had told a story once about when you were going to retire from DuPont, right?
Dow Chemical.
Dow, right, the D.
One of those D peoples, yeah.
Exactly, from Dow. And they said, well, what are you going to be doing? So, well, I'm going to be going and traveling and speaking and performing magic. Well, what are you doing now? Well, I'm speaking and performing for magic. So they said, well, why not stay employed and continue, I guess.
Well, no, that was never
exactly
an interview
right.
from them. That might have been in my impression.
In your mind, yeah.
In my mind,
yeah.
I suppose, but... Yeah, so I kind of figured, well, I was already doing that, so that's what I would do. I mean, I was
doing
so
what
I
you
did
love.
A lot of teaching. Yeah, and so that's, I suppose I was preparing for that all the way along,
mm-hmm.
but in all of life, aren't we preparing for that all the way
Good
along?
Point. Yep.
You know, and so that's sort of, I just continued doing that,
right.
I guess.
Right.
No, and more answer to that, I suppose, Scott, is, so where are you going to move when you retire?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I'd moved to that. I live in Midland, Michigan. I moved there 4 times, corporate gypsy. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm tired of moving. And so I said, hey, my magic turf is here. Everybody knows me here. My friends are here. I'm 20 minutes from the airport. Why don't I just stay? So I did.
Yeah. So that was the script kind of in your mind. Why should I leave? Because I'm going to be doing the same thing and going to stay where I am, basically. And you've got a beautiful area up there. I love the Christmas cards you used to send out. Now they're emails. But the photos that you take, you know, of the nature and wildlife, is that all just around Midland area?
Not all necessarily, but I've got some of my best shots. I live right on a river.
Okay.
And I'm across from a nature center. Mm-hmm. I'm 2 miles from Main Street. Now, how are you going to beat that?
Wow.
And there will never be any houses over there. So I'm in my own park on my own out there, and I love it out there.
Yeah.
So to quote my now deceased neighbor who died at 100 years, 4 months, the joys of living on the river greatly outweigh its occasional minor inconveniences. So that being said, last year the river cohabited my house, which means it filled up a layer and a half. That was more than minor, but
lost a lot of paper.
Yeah, lost all the magazines, all that stuff. But in comparison, you guys in Houston or Florida, it was a drop in the bucket. Mm-hmm. That being said, it did fill my bucket half full. So, so you have to deal with that too. So that's it. But anyway, so that's where I am.
And so you have influenced, I said, a lot of people certainly over the years, and not the least of which was me, because I've said this to you before, but I don't know that people on the podcast have heard me say this necessarily, about how that we were at the Hawaiian convention, the IBM convention, and I think they'd asked you to write a review, I believe, of one of the shows or the close-up shows or something, and you said to me that, well, you've written some stuff, Scott, you know, that I don't know if you remember this or not even, but because I'd written some things for Genie magazine for Bill Larson that he'd published. There were some convention reports from the IBM, because 1 year Bill said, I'm not going to be going to the IBM convention. Is there anybody who's going to be going who'd like to do a write-up? And I did for that, and then later sent something from the TAOM, and so I think you had seen my name or something and said, well, you can write. Why don't you do this? And so it was kind of like you were pushing me out of the nest, you know, saying, why don't you go do that? And I did. And that was what really kind of started that career, and doing a lot of writing, certainly. And I really enjoyed it, but also getting to know a lot more people within the magic community as I was talking with them to write up something, you know, for the convention reviews and one thing or another. And then that led then to, you know, the podcast I did with Dodd Vickers a while back, and with the Magic Newswire, and then, you know, he pushed me out of the nest to start doing my own podcast, kind of that evolution. But again, it all really started with you and your encouragement, which I thank you very much. And I also would encourage other magicians to learn from you from the standpoint of trying to help others and to mentor other magicians and push them to excellence, because there are a lot of things. Let me say, you kind of remind me, I guess, a little bit of Cesario Pelez. And you know what I'm talking about, because Cesario would point to somebody and say, okay, Rick Heath, you're going to be the artist, you know, and that these different people would point to and say, okay, you're going to be the one who's going to be the tailor, you know, you're going to be the ones who's going to build the props, you're the ones who's going to do the advertising for our newspaper. And that wasn't their background nor their education. But when he said he can see something in someone, and obviously Rick is a great artist and other people were really good at what they did, but they didn't see that in themselves. But it was, I think you have a good eye of recognizing what potential people have. I'm saying all that just to say that I believe that a lot of us have some potential, and we just need to recognize that. And if you could have someone like Gene here, or even you might be able to point that out in other people's lives to encourage them to be better people, and to achieve excellence that you know is within them. I'm getting kind of philosophical here.
I do remember, though, saying that to you, that you should write. Of which convention was that?
Was the IBM convention in Hawaii, which would have been, what, about 83 or something like
that? Well, so two things might have happened at that one, because I was the MC of the finale show.
Because I remember you also did your part-time professional lecture.
I probably did. So telling about that last night show. So you talk about a killer show. Mm-hmm. So the closing three acts were in order. Mr. Electric and Harry Blackstone Jr. And Shimada.
Right.
How's that for a closing bill?
What a heck of a show!
And so
MC'd it.
And I MC'd it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so two things. One, I was not going to write the review of that convention because it was on it. Number two, I'd also seen in you because you'd written some things. And I said, Scott, you ought to write this. Yeah. You could do it. And he said, oh, you really think? Yeah, you should. And then you did. And then you started that. So I'm glad I spurred you on. But I mean, so it was greed on my part. I didn't want to do it. But secondly, no, you spot people and they can do something and you encourage them. And so there's a quote about that, that is, if you help somebody else up the hill, you're that much nearer the top yourself. So it's like that.
Pay it forward. Kind of
yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that seems to have worked out well.
I mentioned Doug Henning at the first of this also, and that you were close to him, and you probably helped push him to excellence as well, I've got to say, somewhere along the path.
Well, I got Doug Henning stories that have probably never been written down, but right. Or maybe were. So here's how that – so I'll just tell that now because I think it's interesting now.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a thing in Bay City, Michigan at the Consistory, which was for 32nd degree Masons, and I'm not one. But I had one of my, and they had, it was booked. There was a show, they had a, this was back in the day when they could do turkey dinners and have a big thing, and they had on a bill always five acts.
Right.
And there was always, because that was built, booked out of Chicago by actually Celeste Evans' husband. He booked
really?
Him. And he brought on a magician on the show all the time. So I saw them all. Because one of my friends was a Mason, and he was in the Magic Club, and he says, Gene, here's who's going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. So I saw Carol Fox and Bob Lewis and just a whole bunch of people there. Well, then my friend said, hey, there's a young Canadian magician that's on the show. He's really very good. So I just go. I knew about when the break after dinner would be, and all the men are going to the restroom. Mm-hmm. And so then I could just kind of walk in with him and stand by a post. And so I never, you know, and that's what I did.
Yeah,
so I went to all of these shows. But this one, I got back, got there a little bit early. So I went backstage first. Mm-hmm. And it was Doug Henning and Mars. Now, I'd never heard of him. So I go back and I introduce myself. And he says, oh, you're Gene Anderson, which is odd because he's working and I'm not, and he's heard of me and I've never heard of him, but that's how it was. Uh-huh. All right. So you watch him, he comes out, and at that time they were wearing, I remember, yellow and purple satin kind of outfit, and he had long hair.
Right.
And
he's still the hippie days back
it
in
It was
the
still
60s.
The hippie yeah. days, and mm-hmm. so it was kind of that look. And so when he came out, by the time you're a 32nd degree Mason, you're an old cat, and you mm-hmm. and so he comes out and it kind of bristle. I remember this. Because there's hippie kid. Well, you didn't have to watch Doug Henning very long before you said, well, he might have long hair, but he's not one of them hippies.
Yeah.
You literally could see that audience
there was
melt.
There something about him.
You could just see, or you could see it happen. Mm-hmm. And so then I talked to him. I said, we went out for coffee afterwards, and I said, so what are you doing? Do you have to get back to Canada or to Toronto this week? No. So I invited them to my house, and they came to my stayed at my house, and I never met them. This is on Thursday night, and they came to my house after the show on Friday night. What is that?
Yeah.
So they stayed that whole weekend.
Sounds like Charlie Miller.
Yeah, almost, almost. And so that was the first of many trips back and forth. But I was very formative to mm-hmm. Doug at that point. Now, and we talked about a lot of stuff, but I didn't teach him the Turner. It didn't even come in the conversation.
Yeah.
I got in his head on other stuff. So here's what it was. For example, I remember very clearly one thing. So he was going to design a new table, and I said, so let's just talk about tables. I'm a nut on tables. Mm-hmm. So what's the standard table that we see? It's this base that goes down as a tripod, legs underneath there, right. A little base.
Right.
Because back in 1910, that's what they had in living rooms, and there was a table, you know, a lamp on top of this table, and so it was standard then. Mm-hmm. We still use that because it's practical and folds up and looks like nothing that anybody has ever seen before. Okay? It's just
not,
stupid.
Good
okay?
point. Good point.
Magician table.
Yeah.
So I said, why? I mean, you're doing all this stuff. Why are you, you know, why don't you? Well, once you've asked the question, the answer isn't too far away. So then he redesigned what this table should be mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. And then I was pushing him and I said, you already knew more. Oh, then he came back to my house, or maybe I was at his, and he had this grant from I've got it written down what it is, but the Canada National Foundation, whatever it was, mm-hmm. to study magic as an art.
Right.
And then he got this, that's all written up. I don't have to talk about that.
Correct, because he traveled all over and studied under Vernon and everybody else.
Well, and so he wanted to study under. So he wanted to study under Di Vernon mm-hmm. Whatever his name.
Slidini?
Slidini, yeah, Tony Slidini. Yeah. And I said, why? They don't do magic for anybody other than other magicians.
Yeah.
Why don't you study mime and acting and something to learn to ply your trade? Mm-hmm. So he did some, but not enough, by the way. Mm-hmm. But you could see some of the mime in what he did on stage.
Exactly.
You could see some of it. not a skilled mime, but you could see it.
Not Shields and Yarnell quality.
No, but you could see it.
Yes.
But Di Vernon did teach him some stuff that was very formative, mm-hmm. okay? I don't think so much from Sly Deeney, but anyway, okay. just because. And then he came back to my house, and he had written a script for something called, it was called Spellbound. And it had an actor, a magician, and a goddess of magic, and a girl. And so it was framed around some illusion stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he said, I read this script, and I said, now this girl, is she in love with the magician or not? Is the goddess of magic a sexual creature or an asexual creature? Mm-hmm. Is the girl jealous of the goddess of magic, or who are these people?
Yeah, what's the conflict? And what?
I want to know who these people, I didn't care about the tricks. Oh, so he licked his wounds and crawled back to uh-huh. Toronto and uh-huh. got a scriptwriter. Yeah. And to make a long story short, he opened at the Royal Alexandra in Toronto with a thing called Spellbound, was panned by the press, and proceeded to break the house record set by Hair at that theater, which was a big deal. So not quite this simple, but it's there that Broadway folks discovered him, and they bought the show, but they didn't buy the show because there was nothing. They bought Doug Henning, mm-hmm. and he went with his two principal assistants. And so Maya, the goddess of magic, who's Leslie Fitzpatrick, didn't get to go, bought his two, Brian Lumley, who was one of them, who I still am in contact with, and with Leslie, by the way, Maya, mm-hmm. after all these years.
Wow, okay. What is she doing?
She lives in Stratford, Ontario. Stratford, not Stratford-upon-Avon, but she's there, and she's still in the magic training and magic, all that stuff. She's great.
Does she do drama and theater and stuff? Or
all that, and dance and blah, blah, blah.
Okay,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. She's great. She's great.
She's got to be in her 70s, maybe, you think?
Not quite that old.
Okay.
60s, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, she's great. And her mm-hmm. husband's an actor.
Okay.
And so
Debbie was a little bit younger than Doug, or were they about the same age?
I never, I don't really know, because he was married twice.
Okay.
So.
But Debbie was one you knew, or did you know his other?
I didn't, the other one, I didn't really know her either.
Okay.
But I was at that wedding, the first wedding I was at.
Okay.
Okay. There were only six, I wrote that up in my book. There were only six mm-hmm. magicians at that first, maybe it was eight. But anyway.
And they were who?
And it's in my book.
I have to go back and look. I know that. Remember that.
Yeah. But anyway.
So buy the book, folks.
It was Peter Pitt and Bill Larson and, but a few. But at his wedding. So
yeah.
I'm just bragging now, okay? So he only wanted, there were two singers and a magician that performed at his wedding. Modesty forbids me from telling you the name of the magician.
But did that magician do a torn, restored newspaper by chance? No,
he did not. What he wanted is the torn message.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's in the book.
Which was the message that he had prepared, I guess,
for
Debbie?
Or? I wrote it.
Oh, okay.
No, and it wasn't Debbie.
Okay.
It was his first wife.
I'm sorry, pardon me. Gotcha.
Barbara D'Angelo.
Okay,
D'Angelis, I guess.
Yes.
Right. And so I met Debbie once, but that whole world had changed by then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I wasn't close. I met her once, but that was...
Right.
That was it.
Well, when he was on Broadway, as I recall, the story that you were telling about how that you were there for the first night,
right? On opening night,
right?
Yes.
And that he was he opening with the Torn Restored?
It didn't open with it. It was second.
Okay. It was second.
Second of the show.
But he always said that was his favorite trick of everything.
Well, that and the Metamorphosis.
Yeah,
he cut his teeth on Metamorphosis. So Brian Lumley, who was his principal assistant, was never a magician. He was a carpenter.
Yeah.
So he built these things, but then he developed all this stuff backstage, but he was learning. So he was with Doug up through the first special on television, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Doug wasn't with the show that long. He was only about 2 years on the show on Broadway. And the show continued to run with other people.
That's what Chip Romero was telling me, I believe it was, and who was saying that it ran, but it didn't. The reason it didn't run any longer is because that it wasn't Doug with the show, because he was out doing, I guess, other live shows, and other than the live show on Broadway. But it was Doug that people wanted to see. It wasn't just the magic show. It was Doug and the magic show. He had a character.
I'm going to say Yein. That's German for yes and no.
Okay.
It ran for 4.5 years. Doug was only with it 2 years, and when it closed, it was the ninth longest running musical in the history of Broadway. So mm-hmm. I think Chip has got some of those things a little bit confused.
Okay.
Now, that being said, Doug did not allow anybody else to do the torn and restored newspaper. So when the poor guy, and this was Peter DiPaolo, went on the road with the Magic Show, touring with the Magic Show, yep, he could not do the torn and restored newspaper. He had to do something else. He did a rope trick.
Yeah.
Okay. And he only taught the torn and restored newspaper to one other guy who was an actor who did it on Broadway, but it was an actor that replaced him as not a magician. Okay.
I may stand corrected. You know, going back and saying that was Chip, it might have been Neil McNally, who has the Doug Henning Project as a website or something.
Okay. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But it ran longer than that.
Yes.
So once they went, so the breakthrough for Doug was really that first television special. It was the first one that was ever done by anybody.
Right.
And was done live, and that put him on the map. And after that, the rest is history.
Right. That's what I think it was Mike Caveney or someone, again, maybe I have that wrong, who had said something about that on Christmas, the day before Christmas, because it was a Christmas special, I think, on television the day after.
It was either Christmas or Thanksgiving. I'm not sure which.
It was around the holiday time.
It was one or the other, but it was a big prime time where people were there watching.
And they'd said that, the day before, up until that point, that magicians were just nerds. And then suddenly the next day you were cool. Magic was cool because he made.
I don't know if it's that quick.
He changed
the course of history. He absolutely changed the face of magic. No question about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we didn't have to be in white tie and tails and et cetera. And so he changed the costuming, the everything about it.
Right.
And it's like,
completely different. Now you say so, there's. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so the torn and restored newspaper, it never came up in the conversation. I taught it to him in Jerry Conklin's living room at at Abbott's Magic Get Together in 1972. So he came there with Mars in their VW bus because he was still a hippie kid. I mean, he had no money. He had no anything. So they came in the bus and they parked in the front lawn at Jerry Conklin's. And I remember we had to push the bus to get it started, by bus. It was one of those van kind of things, that they weren't really a bus. They were, but we had to push that thing. She had nobody. It was just so funny.
And you had to pop the clutch or something to get it
whatever,
going.
Whatever, all that stuff, And so I taught it to him in the living room there, and then he took it from there, and then he became so jealous of that trick, I think he didn't want me to do it. But
it was like his new thing.
And then when he put it on, did it on the television special and so on, then a lot of people, some people started accusing me of doing Doug Henning's trick, but he straightened that out pretty quick.
So he started giving you credit for that.
He was always very generous in that. There was not a question. There was never a question. But there's other people that would see me do it, and then they accused me of, because he was more famous than me. He put the Turner Restored newspaper on the map. I did not. I had it out there long before him.
Yeah.
But he put it on the map.
Now, you have to have some memorabilia. What special thing do you hold near that you think, this was something that Doug gave me and is important to me? I'm guessing it's than just the memories.
Mostly the
thing?
Memories.
Sure.
I put one, and I put it in the book, but he sent a letter to me, and it wasn't about the Torn and Restored newspaper, but just a couple of letters from him. But I don't have much. I'm not much of a collector, unfortunately.
Of anything?
I've accumulated some stuff, but I haven't collected anything.
Yeah.
Oh. Too bad. I should have, I suppose.
Yeah, in hindsight, you kind of look at some of those things.
Yeah.
We talk about Chip Romero, knowing that he said, I believe I've got like 2/3 of everything Doug has.
Yeah, he's a nut on it, but Chip's so great. Oh, God, he's great.
He is.
And he does the Torn and Restored newspaper probably better than me. He is really good at it.
He does a very good job of that. Yeah. He's made that kind of a centerpiece in his routine also. And he gives homage then to you and to Doug Henning, saying and talking about Doug and his show and how he had changed kind of the course of history for what magicians do and how they appear.
No question.
But the reason I asked that question is because the Chip said to me, because I visited his home to see all this stuff and spent the day with him. Literally the day and night. And there were more things that he could have shown me. But he was saying, of any of Doug's things, which thing would you like to have? What would what's important to you? And I think I took him aback a little bit when I was saying John Cornelius's Fickle Nickel, which was the one that opened his show. And he said, well, that's a little bit arcane kind of a thing. I mean, that's not something that most people would know nor remember. But to me, that was that was great. You know, when he opened the show with nothing but the camera on his hand and then making that nickel, you know, when he closed his fist and was gone, you know, kind of a thing. And
tremendous.
Yeah. I talked to John Cornelius about that, and he was talking about how when, I guess, Doug had worked with him, recalled him and got that. And then he was surprised, I think, too, that they put it on the very first beginning of the show.
Well, no, that's great. And so the one, the memorabilia, you asked about that.
Yeah.
So it's a letter from Doug, and that didn't happen often, but a handwritten from him. And it's on the fourth special, I taught him another something, which is the Hindu thread, which is slightly different than the
gypsy thread.
The gypsy thread. Okay, it's Al Baker's. Okay. And I put it in my book because it's forgotten.
Okay.
I've got handling on it.
Yeah.
And the difference is that the pieces you put in their hands, and so you are absolutely clean. And it's where, what? Okay. So, and this note he says, the producer said, it's the best thing in the show.
Well.
And that's on the fourth special.
Yeah.
And the trick is in my book. Okay.
So. Did he do that on Carson also, or one of the talk shows?
Seems like I saw that don't know. I don't know. He might have. Yeah, he might have. But he did it on that. And it was just a great television thing because it's right there in front of your face. You know, it's so.
Now, in his final days or years, I should say days or months, that it was unknown how ill he was with cancer and that few people had been around him. Did you know he was?
No. We lost him long, long before that. And Steinmeier, I've talked about this, that when Doug went off on Debbie and
overseas with the Maharishi.
Well, or
the
whatever,
TM
but
thing?
Then went into the T-hole. Let's just call it the TM thing.
Yeah.
When he went off on the TM thing, basically it changed his life, and he went off on that. And so, you could put this different ways, but Doug couldn't reinvent himself. Okay, if you look at Madonna, for example, she reinvented herself about seven times.
And Copperfield, too. I guess.
And so, and Doug, you know, and so we were kind of tired of, or unicorns and all of this
rainbows
kind of thing.
Rainbows and all,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that was over, and he never could reinvent himself. So he was off, and so then he went to Canada, back to Canada, and then he tried to run for political party on something or other. But we were out of his life. He got rid of all his magic props.
Right.
We were out of his life. So no, none of us knew any of that because we were no longer a part of his life.
Yeah,
he changed his life. So he was lost to us. Okay?
You know, I knew that he was very serious about all of that, certainly, and I've told the story a few times before too. When I went backstage to meet him, and he was very cordial and everything. And there were two ladies who said something about TM, and all of a sudden, it's like in the break in the conversation, and it just turned physically and started talking with them, and no one else existed in the room. As you know, whenever he would talk with somebody, no one else existed except you. I mean, he had all this attention on you.
Yes.
That's what's one of the best things about a conversationalist. They're not looking for the next conversation, looking over your shoulder. I mean, he was focused on you, you know, and at least that's the way that I felt in meeting with him, and very nice. But again, whenever that they started talking about TM, it's like, okay, now you're talking my language. And it's like, okay, well, I guess we're finished with our conversation. So,
So the good news was, and you can look at that at any part of your own life.
Sure.
You know, you didn't say, this is over, but I guess we don't do that anymore.
Hmm.
And you don't realize when it stopped somehow or other. You can take that about anything in your own life.
Sure.
You know, you say, well, like camping, for example, for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't stop doing that. But I haven't done that for enough. I guess I don't do that anymore. You know, it's like that. Okay.
It's like, I haven't done that in a while. No, think about it. Gosh, I haven't ridden my bike.
I don't guess
time.
I do that anymore. Yeah. Well, so with Doug, that era was really great. But basically, I had no contact with him essentially once he went to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So his life had changed because he didn't have time for us.
Sure.
He didn't have time to turn around.
I can
imagine.
So
communicating with his buddies back home, forget it. That was over.
Right.
So I was
different part of his life.
Broadway,
okay?
Through that Spellbound thing, because I was pretty influential in the Spellbound when he put that together. You know, I was told that.
Did some of that become part of his Merlin show then?
Probably differently. And Merlin was so fraught with so many other things. You can talk to Stein.
It didn't last very long.
So Merlin didn't make it.
Yeah.
Okay, because there were so many conflicts that had nothing to do with Doug at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to hear horror stories. Well, I guess the great one is in Genie when Steinmeier wrote that up. It's a brilliant review of that show that said, you can't believe what went on in that one. And it, so it couldn't survive.
What was it briefly, just, I mean, without going in a lot of detail, would you remember?
Well, for example, Doug hated the color green, but the customer decided he's going to wear green. And when it ended up, he's wearing green.
Okay.
It's that's just one part of, so the customer and the set designer and the, none of them, they were all egomaniac, yeah, whatever. And it's like they couldn't get together or agree on anything. So
too many big heads in one room and couldn't
Amen. They couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And prior to that, because there's some wonderful stories about, and Brian Lumley, you need to talk to Brian Lumley sometime. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what Chip says. Brian is.
You need to. I mean, but he's up in Toronto. He lives on a boat. Can you believe that?
Wow. Okay.
He lives on a boat in Toronto.
Huh?
And
was
he was
the producer?
No. He was the carpenter that built the sub trunk for the first special, which was a different sub trunk that was used in the show.
Okay.
I just say that. Yeah. So you want to talk to somebody that's got the stories on Doug Henning.
Brian Lumley.
It's Brian Lumley.
Okay.
So he just spoke at the history. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that was before Johnny Gaunt started building
stuff. Oh, long time.
Yeah, okay.
Long time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But he just spoke what? Anyway,
so when Jackie Onassis came to the show,
because
nobody knew about that, nobody could know about that.
Yeah.
And so his Brian's stories on this were so funny because, okay, so here's all the Secret Service people.
Yes.
And they don't want him going up the ladder. Well, he's got to do this show, and he's got to go up the ladder, and he's got to do this and this. And so they were going to do the sword suspension. They couldn't do that. And so Doug says, finally, if I'm not doing that, I'm not doing the show.
Yeah.
And it was that conflict with the Secret Service people, and by God, it was Jackie Onassis, and she loved the show. She was, and frankly, and Brian has told me this, the reason he got on television with that special was Jackie Onassis.
Really? Wow. Huh.
So, there's history back there.
Did he end up getting to go up the ladder and doing the sword?
Well, I mean, he didn't go up the ladder, but yes, they did the show.
Yeah.
But it was this conflict, and so the Secret Service, you know, I mean, so Brian was like, because he's got to do the dancing Hank, and he's back there, then they didn't, you know, I mean, it's like, they don't know what there is, so it's like, God, the conflicts backstage, I mean, just because they walked in right before the show, and then they're saying, can't do that, well, I mean, we got a show to do. Now, you want to do it or not? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it came down to that conflict.
Yeah. Wow.
But that story from Brian, you would love it. Okay. Brian is just great.
Wow.
And So.
Going back to something else earlier, talking about.
Sorry, I got on a tangent here.
No, I like the direction.
Okay.
You said the TAOM was one of your first conventions, but you were from Minnesota, and people were wondering, well, why were you all the way down there? And then also that you went to the University of Texas, didn't you? And
you got
your degree there?
I got a PhD there.
Yes. And so that was in chemical engineering?
And chemistry.
Anyway. Okay. And you and Walter Blaney knew each other well, I guess, from
UT. I met him well once I was down there, you know. But so influential people to me, and this is in the book too, is one of the great people was Ed Watkins.
Oh, sure.
Ed Watkins was, you know, the main guy at Douglas Magic Land.
Right.
So for whatever reason, he took me under his wing, and he taught me his Cy Stebbins routine, which I learned. But I got back to my house, and I couldn't remember if this was in ascending or descending order. Mm-hmm. And I learned it the wrong way, and still the way I do it. It's not what I put in the book, but it's my major thing. And his son, or no, his grandson
Dennis, is
in Chicago.
Correct.
And about the top. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just like funny. So I've been in contact with Dennis, but mostly, and then with also, Ed's son is in Atlanta as a Shakespeare theater guy. And I contacted him because I knew him as a kid. He was a teenager at the time and a photographer. And so I bought one of his things because I just liked it and I liked him and so on.
Yeah.
But it's just like, but Ed Watkins was really formative to me as a brand new guy. And then, Walter. And then I got to know all those Texas guys at that time because I was there. And then my great mentor down there was Van Cleve, Cleve Howbold. And he was back getting his PhD in playwriting.
I did not know that.
And while I was getting mine in chemistry. So he taught me at the time all the stagecraft I know. I mean, I've learned some since. But, I mean, you talk about learning stuff. That's where I learned it.
Right.
From him. He wrote my newspaper act, basically.
Van Cleve?
Yeah, he scripted it, mm-hmm. and it's still, I mean, the order, it's still what I do. Now, I've added things to it, but it's still that format that I do.
The basic idea of, like, you hear it ripping kind of a thing?
Not the pattern on that. That was after him. Okay. But, no, I'm not talking about the Turner Restored. I'm talking about the newspaper act.
Oh, newspaper, okay, with the hat and everything else.
All the hat, sure. And all that stuff.
Yeah, and cutting it up. And
so the hat was the most formative thing in the thing, and then later on, the Turner Restored came. But it had, it wasn't the first thing.
But was your Torn Restored inspired by somebody else's?
What? So here's the story on that. Okay, so more University of Texas stories, if you will. All right. So first I'm going to give you serendipity. You know the word.
Yeah.
But do you know the origin of that word?
I guess not.
No,
I was,
most people don't.
I thought it was from Greek mythology.
Nope.
Okay.
It was put in our language by Horace Walpole, British, 1754. Mm-hmm. It was based on the three princes, male plural, princes of a mythical kingdom, Serendip, whose father, the king, thought they were not growing up with proper standards somehow, so he sent them off and they had adventures. And these are things that could have turned out good, could have turned out bad, and they found a way to make them turn out fortunate. So serendipity in its richest form is an unexpected happening that you make turn out fortunate.
Okay.
Part of that's been lost currently is sagacity, the wisdom to know what you've even got here. Mm-hmm. All right. So if you look at serendipity in my case, okay, so I go off to the University of Texas, and there happens to be this Van Cleve guy who's getting his PhD in playwriting and has directed a lot of plays and can, well, that's pretty formative stuff. Housed at the library at the University of Texas was a donated collection of the McManus Young collection, which at the time was either the second or third best collection of magic books in the United States, the best being at the Library of Congress.
Okay.
And I had access to that locked collection as a card-carrying magician.
Yeah.
So I had the books. So I go off, and then Van Cleve says to me, hey, I've never been to a magic convention, and he says, well, if you just go and see, nobody will know who you are. If you go and do, people will know who you are. So you should go and do. So I went to my first magic convention and competed, and I'd never been at a magic convention. So, and I won originality trophy for the hats.
Okay.
Because it's a typography.
Yes.
With newspapers.
With newspaper,
so I
right.
won. So then Frances Marshall, whom I had never met, wrote to me, and she was compiling these books on magic with handkerchiefs, magic with ropes, but they were compilations. Mm-hmm. And she said, we should do a book on newspaper. So she had the magazines because she's married to Jay Marshall, and I had the books.
Yeah.
And then we wrote newspaper magic, and I didn't meet her until it was all done. Almost. Can you believe this?
No.
I never met her.
That is funny.
And so, I mean, it is funny.
Wow.
So we corresponded, but that's how we... So then I put my act up front and some other stuff, but then I was really developing stuff for my act because I had to put it in there.
Right.
And I wasn't planning on... I didn't have the North Turner... Okay. In that original act that I did Al Curran's Turner Restored newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't honestly believe that he ever really performed it because he put another one in. This was put in routine manipulation one and a routine manipulation, and it was based, used a clip. Two methods of a torn and restored newspaper, basically.
Okay.
You have a clip, its advantage is speed, and you have a pocket, and its advantage is concealment somehow or other.
Okay.
That's
but sure.
Okay, in general.
Okay.
Okay. So, and in routine manipulation four, he had another version, which is based with a pocket, and it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I did the original one in that first act, but it really doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I explained that at the History of Magic conference, and it's in the book, as to why not. So, but I decided I have to review, I'm going to review these tricks, you know, because they ought to have it. So I went and I bought 10 commercial versions, and I learned to do them all. So Sly, Dini, Al Bakers, etc. I learned to do them all.
Sure.
So I had done my homework, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then one night I was getting my PhD, so I was in the lab every night. And I came home, and I don't know what got into me, and I had to invent that trick. I don't know what. Mm-hmm. So I came up, and I'm a morning person. I'm not a night person. And I was up until about 3:30 in the morning, and I came up with five ways to do it. They were all based on a flash restoration, which was Al Curran's thing.
Okay.
none of them were there yet, but three, the load went south somehow, okay?
Yeah.
But they were all somehow flash restoration. That was the common denominator.
Okay.
And one of them eventually, and at first, that was single sheet, so two-page single sheet. And I guess Curran's premise was, well, it's so fast that nobody will want to see where it pieces went. Well, I'm sorry, they did, and you had no place to hide, and they're right back there.
Yeah.
So I had to come up with some way, so that was the one problem. And you could see when the load went over the top. I mean, the eye, it's fast, but the eye is faster, so right. I'm sorry. So I had to fix those two things. Mm-hmm. So that's the major breakthrough, I suppose, and who would have thunk it? So there you are, and you're doing it, and there's serendipity, and then I made a way to turn this fortunate. And then, but you can't predict in advance that people are going to like it or anything. History will tell. That's it.
Boom. That's a good point. You know, it's like when people are making movies, you know, the directors and the actors and everybody, and they're thinking, oh, this is going to be a great movie, but you really don't know until later in history. It's like what the movie Star Wars, you know, did, or Citizen Kane, or, you know, you name some of the classics, you know, out there, that at the time you're doing it, you're just doing your job, and you're wondering how the public is really going to accept this or not.
Right.
The same thing with that, I'm sure, that you create this and saying, well, it works for me. Maybe others might like this, too.
Yeah.
Never knowing what you're going to be doing that's going to change the way that...
Exactly, Scott. Exactly. You can't, and you hope for it.
Sure.
But, you know, so I quote in my book, I got a lot of it there, but it says, the success key to success is simple. Do your best, and some people might like it.
yes, that's right. Hopefully, a lot of people.
A lot of people. So, I mean, this turned out very fortunate, but
right.
you can't know.
No.
Okay, there's no way you could know. So that was nice, you know.
Yeah. That is nice. Now, you were talking also about the hotel here where, as we're recording this, we're in Grand Rapids, and this is the Amway Hotel, and we were talking about corporate market and how that's kind of changed a little bit as far as the speaking and performing, and I'm not doing as many corporate shows as I used to, and I don't know that anyone really is. Things have changed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I used to be, and we talked about this hotel. Well, other things about this town, though, which has been very pleasing to me. It's 2.5 hours from me.
Mm-hmm.
But when you walk down the street and you go into the brew pub or you go anything, the people here are so friendly so nice. And it's every one of them. And you say, this is a really nice town. I mean, you walk around and it's just a friendly town. I don't know why.
Right.
It just is.
It's kind of southern hospitality. It's kind of like Texas in a way. Well, you think people are friendly there? You know, in Texas, but the same way here, I think people are very friendly.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just is really nice. But so the Amway Grand is a big, grand, old hotel.
It is.
But and I used to do lots of things here, but that market of that corporate banquet market, let's have a big banquet and have entertainment after, ain't nobody doing that anymore.
And certainly not, and if we are, it's not the same rates that we used to get.
No.
That's changed. Same thing, I think, like with trade show magicians, we'll admit as well that there are not as many people performing at trade shows as there were, nor is the budget there for a lot of them. I've heard Paul
Gertner
talk about, you know, lamenting about this, and he was, we were vectors 1 year. And he was talking about one of his clients and that he'd had for so many years and that they were going in a different direction, couldn't talk them into it. And somebody said, well, what was the name of that company? Again, you know, kind of joking. He said, call them. He said, if you can do something I can't do, he said, they're done, you know, with magic. Good luck to you, you know, basically. So,
And you look at our stuff like just by going back on the nightclub acts, for example.
Yeah.
That's gone. There's no place to work
that's
that anymore.
That's a good point.
That is all gone. And so you look at, because I'd mentioned Bob Lewis. That I saw Bob Lewis.
Yeah.
And I love Bob
Lewis. And Ginny.
Bob and Ginny.
Yeah.
Do you know what their original act was?
Well, I know he played the ukulele, I guess, but not their original act.
Well, you got the instrument wrong, but the original act, they were ballroom dancers.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't
In
know
a
that.
Ballroom dance act.
Okay.
It was a banjo player.
Banjo.
Big difference.
Banjo. Yeah.
Big difference, okay?
Dance strings. Okay.
And a 5-string banjo player, by the way.
Okay.
That's a big difference, okay?
Yeah.
But not bluegrass, okay?
Yes.
That's not what he did. But
that was funny, you know.
But that he went to that, and so instead of this elegant ballroom dance act, then Ginny would come out, and she was the worst assistant ever.
Yeah.
And it was such a funny act. I think I might have the number wrong, but I believe they were on the Ed Sullivan Show 23 times.
Holy moly.
I think they had the record for, I think more than Jay Marshall, and I think Jay Marshall was on 19.
Okay.
But you could get the numbers. I mean, yeah. I don't have them, but it's in that range, and I'm not off by more than five.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just having a conversation about him recently, talking with Don Weiberg, as we were talking about the Chicago Roundtable.
Okay.
And some of the many people, and
okay.
Don has known probably 90% of the people who are on this picture that Salvador Sali had drawn. You know, with all
okay.
the people.
Okay. Okay.
And so he was telling stories about all of these people, and
oh, wow.
Bob and Jenny were a couple of
oh,
who were members
were so
of the Roundtable way back when.
They were so great. Oh,
yeah.
What a great act.
And
I got other stuff about Bob Lewis worked a line over more than anybody I've ever seen.
Really?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the immaculate guy of, mm-hmm. of doing a line. And mm-hmm. there's a quote. This is Mark Twain quote. He said, "The difference between the right word, no, I got to say this right, and I might miss one word in here.
Okay.
The difference between almost the right word and the right word is really major. It's the difference between the lightning bug and the lightning."
That's good.
Is that great?
That is great.
I mean,
great.
It's just, uh-huh. you got to look it up because it's not major. It's not the word in
yeah,
there,
yeah.
but it's that. And so Bob Lewis would tweak a line this way and that way. And so that line that you've heard before about on a funeral, of how big the funeral will be, mm-hmm. and I'll paraphrase
Depends
it,
upon
but
the,
those three setup things
yes.
on there, you know. So that this, no matter how, and I'm going to get that part wrong, but he wrote the line which got ripped off by everybody, okay?
Oh, Bob did?
But Bob, it's Bob's line.
Yeah.
It's Bob's line, okay? But basically, here's that joke. No matter how rich you are, or how much success you've had, or how much money you've made, the size of your funeral will pretty much depend on the weather.
Yeah, the attendance at your funeral.
Yeah, something. Yeah. So I'm missing
yes.
that, but the concept.
Yes.
But those words that he had exactly, precisely right, mm-hmm. those were Bob Lewis's, and he wrote the line.
Yeah, apparently Jim Hoy had snuck in a recorder to one of the shows, and he and Don Weiberg had transcribed a lot of that, which I'm glad that we've got those.
Oh,
now.
Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, yeah.
Yeah, so Don's got somewhere, I think he's got the tape, but he's also written down kind of a little, just a personal pamphlet for his own use. It's not, you know, something that's been, you might ask him about that.
Oh, that would be fun. But, I mean, he was just, you know, it's an arrow that was back there. And it was just,
yeah.
there's nothing that can follow it or replace it because
well, they don't
it's
have the
gone,
clubs, like you said. And that was kind of the point that Don was talking about. You know, all these guys who played the clubs, you know, back then, you know, at the, was it the Embassy Room or someplace? I
right,
think, at,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or that thing
Cardini
I talked about
and others.
With that traveling circuit that went, you know, twice a year. They'd do this big turkey dinner, and it
yeah.
went on for four nights, I believe. And they'd have about 400 people a night to this thing and bring in these guys. Well, nobody does that anymore.
No.
You know, I mean, they don't do it there, and so there's that market's gone. So that is another one that's gone.
Right. Well, it's all gone. Of course, then television, you know, it went from vaudeville, you know, and then
that whole thing. Movies, right. Yeah. So mm-hmm. we see that, and we just don't want to recognize what's happening to us now because we can't see it. But, hey, our world has changed.
It has dramatically. And again, even from television going to smart instruments where people are going to be watching YouTube or Netflix or whatever else. So
exactly
there are other
that.
Kinds of things that are digital that are handheld devices that you can watch. And also everybody has a much shorter attention span.
Right.
You know, and I was just talking with someone yesterday about that, about how that a lot of the tricks that are being put out now are really more one of a kind. I should say one trick DVDs as opposed to,
yeah.
You know, a DVD that would have like your whole lecture. It would just have one item.
Right.
Or something, you know.
Right.
I guess just for attention span, again, people can focus on this trick and whatever. I don't know.
No, they can sell something.
I guess that's
true. It comes down to greed.
Well, that went back again from the old records that would have, you know, an A side and a B side, and then you had a CD that had all it, and then they started going to just to down digital downloads per song, you know.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, a lot of things have certainly changed, and you have to kind of go with it because that's just the evolution. It's just the evolution.
It
you
is.
Know?
It is. You know, and you can say, oh, isn't it a pity? It doesn't matter if it's a pity or not.
It doesn't.
It is where it is.
Which, going back to Ed Watkins, I was going to say, we were at a TAOM meeting because he was a past president of the Texas
yeah,
Association
sure.
of Musicians. And we were talking about the website for the TAOM and having someone who was going to develop the website and we needed to pay for a domain and whatever. And I swear it was Ed who had said this, that he said, I don't know if we should actually put any money towards this because I don't know if this internet thing is going to work out or not.
Yeah.
No. He was one of the old guys. Like, no. I'm not going to go with this.
No. And it's just funny because you say, yeah.
Yeah, but we never know. Well, Gene, thanks very much. I appreciate the stories.
Thank you. I didn't know we were going to be sitting here and doing this for so long. Well, this has been fun for me.
Time flies, you know.
It does.
I think it's important that some of the stories that I know that you put down in the book, and I wanted to kind of get out here also. Some people don't have the book, and so for those who don't, they should probably go to where and how can
To my website, GeneAnderson.com.
Okay.
So it's only available from me.
Right?
It's called The Book. Here's why. I'll tell you one more story. So this is with you guys at Fechter. Yeah. Every year I'd come and I'd say, I need a title for this thing. All they were coming up with is Above the Fold, Beyond the Headlines, and then blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Newspaper somehow.
Correct.
Well, if I'm doing an hour show, 11 minutes is with newspaper and 49 minutes is with something else.
Stuff, yeah.
I do know some other things, and those are in the book too. So, I'm more than a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Now, you like to be identified with something. But anyway, so finally, I've been calling it The Book. So I just finally just called it The Book.
Yeah, by Gene Anderson.
So that's how it happened.
Yes, okay. I know it's been taking years and years because I always enjoyed having breakfast with you whenever we were sitting around. And one of the great things too, if some of you guys are going to magic conventions and you do meet with friends, that one of the things that you might consider is kind of because you see all of the friends each year at a convention, and it's nice to kind of catch up and see what everyone does. And
absolutely.
What you do is that each day there will be a different group of people with you for breakfast and say, okay, your turn. You know, what has happened in your life this past year, you know, with your family? Not necessarily magic, but, you know, what is it about you, Scott Wells, you know, that has happened? Or, you know, what are you enjoying, you know, with your family, grandkids, or whatever? And so you really get to know each other and what's happened, kind of getting caught up on that. And then when it came to your turn, you're always showing the book and saying, well, here's where we are now.
Well, that's true, but not in that setting,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, well,
so let me correct that.
Thank you. Okay?
Because first of all, I don't want pancake syrup on my book. And secondly, no, here's the deal. And so when I do that, I want six people at the table, no more.
Yeah.
Because if there's eight, you break into two groups. So
this
is kind of a controlled environment, and we're each going to take our turn, and we're going to go around the room and not around the table.
Right.
And we each got to tell our story of what's happened in this last year.
Right.
But so it's kind of structured, and I'm the monitor, but, I don't hog the picture, you know. But that's it.
It's like, okay.
But that was not about, it could have been something about the book, but that's usually not what I'm talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you again.
But I know that there were some updates that we had. But my point I was going to say is just that it has taken a long number of years to write a book.
Yeah.
Every
year I had specific things that I was after, and I got more good answers from more good people about stuff. There's smart people out there if you know how to tap into them.
Oh, yeah. And you were able to do that by being able to tap into them and ask questions, and people willing to share.
I feel wonderfully. You know? Wonderfully.
Yeah. Well, you've got friends all over the world, you know, and everybody loves you, and that and me too. And so it's been a pleasure to have a little bit of time to actually chat, you know, here and let other people know more about you and behind the fold, behind the newspaper.
Okay, behind the fold, above the headlines.
Behind the front page.
Right.
Inside the cover, I don't know.
Inside the cover, yeah. Okay, thanks, Scott, for having me.
Well, one last thing, because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast.
Right.
And I always like to close by asking my guests of what it is that is your magic word. Not necessarily a word, it could be a phrase. What is your philosophy of life? You know, what's important to you? What do you live by? I mean, when you wake up, what charges you to keep you going? I mean, what do you focus on? Is there anything or things that it's kind of a mantra, something in your...
Maybe smile.
That's good.
And I'll tell you why. Okay, when I walk around a convention, and this is not put on, but I smile. And you see some people walking around, and if they're having a good time, they forgot to tell their face.
Oh, boy. Yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm generally smiling.
You are.
And most people are smiling at me, and that's not put on because mostly I think I'm even smiling when I'm weeding the garden. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's important, certainly. You know, I'll never forget one time I had, I had injured my back when I was at the gym or something, and thankfully it was only temporary, but I was in pain one morning, and I was on the street and in downtown Houston, and there was a friend I hadn't seen in a while, and he crossed the street, and he said, "Are you okay?" And I mean, before he even said hello, and I said, "Yeah," and he said, "Well, it looks like, you know, you're in pain, just from looking at my face across the street, not the way that I was walking, but just it looked like I had some anguish on my face, you know." So people can kind of tell your character and how you're doing, and your smile is the best thing. I had also recommended whenever you're going to be going and doing a show or talking about how you love the audience, and even when I walk into performing at a restaurant, before I walk in the door, I will put a smile on my face, you know, to say,
perfect,
you know, I'm going to have a great time. These people are going to have a wonderful time. I love each person, even though I haven't seen people. And I can walk through and I can look through the windows I'm going by and I can see some people. I'm going to enjoy that table. And I, whether I feel like smiling or not, I mean, my teeth are showing. I mean, I'm grinning like a Cheshire cat when I walk in. It's like, hey, I'm glad to be here, you know, and I've got a smile. I get out of the car and it takes a few moments, but I consciously think about putting
on
a smile.
So you do it.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important to smile. Yeah, and also when you do smile, it makes other people smile.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
If you look...
It's infectious.
This won't make the podcast, but I'll just tell you. So I just did a little experiment myself. In our airport, they have to load on the bags on the side little thing because they won't fit on the overhead rack, one of those, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just as an experiment, I stood beside that thing, and everybody that was coming by, that was coming directly by, if they would meet my eyes, I gave them a big smile, and they all smile back. They cannot not smile back. They don't know me or anything. It's contagious.
Right.
So that's what I do. I smile.
That's great. Gene, thank you again very much. Always good spending time with you, and particularly here today on the podcast. So again, I think people should go over and check out his book. Go to GeneAnderson.com, and that you can then order the book directly. Directly online, and I assume that you would probably sign the book, you know, then as well,
if they ask
for an autograph.
I might not, but I mean, because I don't want to be presumptive.
Okay.
If they ask me to sign, of course I'll sign it, and I love to. But if they don't ask, well, I'm not presumptuous. Maybe they're going to give it to their friend, or maybe something else.
But
so
if
I don't
you
know.
Want an autograph, ask for one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you'd be glad to.
Well,
thanks,
oh,
you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Gene Anderson. This is Scotty out.
That was fun.
Well, that was just awesome. I can't believe that we actually had some time to sit down and record this because whether you know it or not, that actually I think Gene is just a little bit shy, at least when it comes to recording, because there have been many instances in the past in which I've been at the 4F convention and have asked him to sit down. And he said, oh, really not right now. So he's kept putting me off and putting me off. And so I'm glad that when we were together this year in Grand Rapids, that he actually had agreed to sit down and to chat for a while because, again, this is kind of been a long time coming, and I've always had this as kind of one of my bucket list people to try to get on the podcast, so I'm so glad to share this with you as number 450. So again, Gene, thank you so much for your friendship over the years and also for spending some time with us here to record this conversation and put this down for posterity, because I know a lot of this is in your book, and there are some things that you added to in this chat that were outside of the book, so perhaps this might be something that will inspire you guys after you listen to this to go back and see about purchasing his book, which you can get through his website, which is GeneAnderson.com. If you want to go more specifically, you can go to GeneAnderson.com/thebook.html, all lowercase. Anyhow, thank you again, Gene. Appreciate your time, your words, and your friendship. All right. Well, I know that many of you tune into this podcast just to listen to the conversations I have with some conjurers and then tune out the rest because you only have an hour's worth of time. And I appreciate that, which is why I try to keep our conversations to about an hour. But for those of you who are also interested in listening to some product reviews, now it's time for a few of those. In fact, we have, as usual, three for Thursday. And I think that these are some things that you might enjoy. I recommend actually all three of them. And one is a brand new thing that had just come out, so that's Morgan and West Decoded. It's a 2-volume DVD set, which is really good. You'll hear about it in a moment. Next is the Self-Flipping Notepad from Sans Minds, and then finally from Magicalism, and that's Bond Lee and Zam Wong were the ones who had who show you this New Flash, NU Flash. And these are a few of the products that come to you from Murphy's Magic Supplies that's available from your favorite magic dealer like theperfecttrick.com. When I attended Magic Live in Las Vegas this year, 2018, one of the outstanding acts, at least for me, was Morgan and West. Victorian magicians is how they build themselves. They had also been on Penn and Teller a couple of times. They fooled us, and they had fooled them the first time, came back a second time with a Kodak. And anyhow, what they had in their focus session, which the way if you hadn't attended a Magic Live, I suggest you do, but nevertheless, they would have focus sessions that would repeat themselves so that you can have an opportunity to go and catch them. Anyhow, three different sessions of different topics, and this was one of them that I was able to catch. And the reason I wanted to is because I've always been interested in a two-person code. I've been doing this for a long time, or used to, with my wife, and we had done this here in Houston, the Magic Island, and then on cruise ships and elsewhere, and really always enjoyed it and have studied several methods and have all the books and DVDs and lecture notes and everything of everyone else's. But I have to say that this really is an interesting concept, and I like the way that they teach. First of all, as I said, that whenever I heard these gentlemen, they're fantastic. This DVD is just fun to watch. It's kind of like watching their show because they're very interactive with each other, where that one will talk and the other will finish the sentence. I mean, and it's not only enjoyable like that, but they're very comical as well, just naturally. So it's kind of, it's very much a lot of fun just to watch the DVD itself. And again, it's called Morgan and West Decoded. Now, the idea on the first DVD, it's a two-DVD set. The first one are some easy things that you can quite simply share with a friend and quickly be able to do. For example, to discern between two different things. If there is a picture on someone's iPhone, for an example, of a man or a woman, that through your eye contact with your between the transmitter and the receiver, between you and the other person, that just through eye contact you can tell them whether it's a man or woman. Same thing with cards, whether they're red or black. As they pick up a card, a spectator would pick up a card, you can see this also. Anyhow, the point is that they start off very easy for the first DVD. The second one gets to more complicated. In fact, pretty much teaches a lot of their professional act, that is having to do with the coins and how that they will transmit the amount and numbers and also letters in the alphabet. There is a interesting, you know, binary code. They taught this again at the focus session. So if you were at Magic Live and you heard the session, then like me, you may have been anxious to get your hands on this DVD, which has just been released, in order to learn more details and to get more in-depth information from them. And that's exactly what it is. Again, the first one is fairly easy. The second one gets to be a little bit more complicated, and it's a lot of fun. I will say that one of the things that they talk about and they teach early on the first one is a code which you would be using certain words associated with 13 numbers. So this way that when you're coding a card, for an example, that if you begin a sentence with the word once, that would be a one, which would be an ace, or if you use the word just hand me the card, or whatever, that if you're using the word just, that would be an eight. The code that they use, again, can be anything that you are comfortable making up for yourself, but they go into some detail about that. The two interesting points about that is, first of all, that as I was watching that when they came to the number seven, and on the screen they would flash the word that would be next to the number they're coding, next to seven, they actually spelled the word seven. The word they meant to say, or he did say, Rob West had said, was the word then, but in the DVD it says seven. And so if you're jotting that down, you might have to go back and scratch your head. And I say jot that down because afterwards he says, you know, you can either go back and write this down, or you can just refer to the handy insert that's included with this DVD. Well, it's not. There's nothing on the DVD, nothing in the package that you receive, nor is there a PDF file or anything that is on the DVD either. So what you get is just the video. And so when you come to that point, if that's something that you want to use their coding words, then you might want to be sure to jot that down. Anyhow, I really like this DVD from start to finish, and it was just enthralling and fun to watch, as I said, because they're an enjoyable couple of guys. I'm glad I had a chance to catch them, in fact, at the Magic Live convention, so I could talk with them for a little bit. If you go back, you can actually do a search search on the magicwordpodcast.com, and you can type in Morgan and West, and you can listen to that little segment that I had with them. It wasn't an extended conversation. We just happened to be together, I think, waiting in line, and so we chatted for a short while. Nevertheless, it's a great DVD. If you are thinking of doing a two-person mind reading act, even if there are some basic things that you would like to learn, maybe to teach someone that you can on the fly, you can certainly do that. This is a great DVD set. If you are a beginner and never have done a two-person mind-reading act, to get started so you can actually build up into your own act. One of the things that they do emphasize, aside from even though they're teaching their act, is A, not to steal their act and their material, but also to develop some words, some codes, some gestures and whatnot that will fit for you. It could be that the words that they use and the way that they structure their sentences may not fit your style, so they encourage you to develop your own system. But this really is a launch pad for using your own creativity and thinking about how that you can have something that would be uniquely yours and not uniquely Morgan and West, because there's no better you than you, just like there's no better Morgan and West than Morgan and West. And those guys are great, and I highly recommend. This is a great DVD, again, called Morgan and West Decoded. Go get a copy. The Self-Flipping Notepad by Sans Minds is a product that was invented by a magician out of Spain named Victor Sans, S-A-N-Z. And the effect is essentially where that you would have a handheld notepad that you can hand to somebody, flip open a few pages and just draw a line and say, write anything that you want. Don't care what it is. Anyhow, some piece of information, one word. I mean, not a paragraph or something, but basically they sign, they print something on this piece of paper, they close it up, and then you're holding the pad away from you, so that's why you cannot see it. But whenever you turn it around, you ask them then to place their hand on top of the pad to make sure that you still can't see through it. However, that in the process of turning it around and demonstrating what you're going to show them as far as how that you want them to place their hands, you're able to get all the information you want. Now, there are some angle problems, as with most Sans Minds effects that I have reviewed. This one is 180 degrees in front of you is great, but those at 180 degrees to your side and behind you, it's not so great. So again, it's one of those things, just choose the right trick for the right situation. There are a couple things about this. First of all, you get a pad that comes with the DVD, and it explains how to make the pad. It says it takes you about 8 minutes, but actually, in order to process this, you have to do something that will take overnight. No problem. It'll just take you a few minutes actually to do it, and it's very simple. And once that you've got it prepared, then in those few minutes, then you just leave it to do whatever it needs to do overnight for the next 24 hours. And it's something that you're going to have for a long time. And I say for a long time until you're out of paper, because let me finish the rest of the effect. And that is that after you reveal the name that the person has written on there, or the word or whatever it is, then let's say, like in the presentation that is shown on the DVD, you say, okay, well, this was a deceased celebrity, and perhaps the person, you know, has come back and made themselves known to me, which is why I know who this is. But then you show the pad, and as you do, all the pages flip forward to reveal that one word and that name. So that is another kind of a kicker why it's called the self-flipping notepad, because it does flip itself open to that page. Then you rip that out, hand it to them. As I started to say, that you just get this one notepad, but it's easily found in most stationery stores and office supply stores, so you'll find it worldwide. That will be a similar kind of a pad that you can use and make another gimmick. It doesn't take long, again, to make the gimmick, but you can get several presentations or several tricks out of the one pad, and it's an inexpensive pad. So it's, again, the trick is not necessarily in the pad, but the preparation of the pad. I like the idea of the trick itself for getting the information. I mean, I've always liked a center tear, I love pre-show work and everything like this. This is something that you could do on the fly, and I like that. And I like Sneak Thief. I like different kinds of peek pads and whatnot. This is a clever way of peeking some information that I haven't seen before. That I think is worth your attention, certainly. And it is again something something that is easy to create, something that has two separate effects. One is where you reveal a word or a name or something that is written, and then number two, then the pad kind of comes to life and then opens to the page revealing that name. So there are two effects there. Or if you don't want to do the second part with the self-flipping, I think just revealing the name is pretty strong in and of itself. But the addition of the thing flipping open is pretty cool. Anyhow, I like it. I recommend it. It's something I think that you might like if you are a mind reader or would like to do some mind reading. This is something that you can create and use as a peek pad for yourself. Again, it's called the Self-Flipping Notepad by Sans Minds. New Flash is a visual bill transformation. New, like Alan New, that's N-U, and it's available from Magiclism Store, or I should say it was produced by Magiclism Store, and that's Bond Lee and Zam Wong. And the idea is exactly what the title implies, essentially that a bill, which can be of any denomination, by the way, not just American currency, I should say, of whether it's going to be a euro or perhaps even a pound note or whatever. Nevertheless, that it can change into a selected card or just a regular card. It can change such that you're going to be having an idea that I had that I thought would be kind of cool is if you show a $20 bill and then suddenly it changes into the four fives, clubs, hearts, spades, and diamonds. So you then have the fives. So you say that of course, a 20 is made up of four fives, and flash, there are four fives. They could be kind of cool. But also, there are other kinds of ideas that come with this that they suggest, for an example, which is kind of interesting, and that is of transforming it into an envelope, like a coin envelope size thing. So essentially, you have a bill, and you can transform that into an envelope, and then you could dump something out of the envelope. One of the ideas they suggest is where that you would have a picture, perhaps, that you can draw on a piece of paper that would be like of a necklace, or that a crude drawing, perhaps, of an individual. Suddenly, whenever that gets folded up, it transforms into the envelope, and then you take out of the envelope the necklace or perhaps the picture. Another idea that they suggest, which is kind of cool, is that if you're going to be doing this perhaps at a wedding reception, or better still, that's going to be for an engagement where you're asked to come to a table and perform something where that you're going to present the ring to the lady or something, and the guy's giving you the ring, you can draw a picture of a ring, and then that picture suddenly transforms into an envelope. She opens her hands, and you dump the ring out into her hand. It's kind of a neat little idea then also. Beyond that, they also had suggested another thing that'd be kind of commercial for trade show work, which interests me, and that is perhaps having a business card. So this way that you can have a bill that transforms to a business card, and you can have a stack of cards, and you can change that out, and so you can hand out your business card, or it could be something that is the logo of the company that you're working for that's a piece of paper, and it quickly transforms into this into the cards or whatever it is you're going to be giving out. Now, this is a DIY, meaning it's a do-it-yourself kind of a thing, but what I like about this is that unlike a lot of things that you get from Sans Minds, this particular one I received, it was already sealed in the package that is already pre-made. Now, they go into great detail how you can make your own if you want to. In other words, it comes with a gimmick card already made, but it tells you how to make another gimmick card. And also the envelope. The envelope doesn't come with it, but you can buy an envelope, do that, or the business card, or whatever else, as they suggest in the instructional DVD that comes with this gimmick. So it doesn't take long for you to put this thing together, even if you started from the beginning, but you don't need to have all of the double stick tape and everything else because the card is already made with the magnets and everything already built into the card. So the cool thing is that whenever that you purchase this, that you get one that all you have to do is just peel off this little thing, stick your car or your bill, I guess, in there, and so this way that it can you can almost do it immediately in tonight's show. Not that you would ever want to do that. You need to rehearse a lot. It's a very cool trick. I like this idea, and it is something that is a little bit new. I've not seen this kind of flash appearance or a transformation before of a bill into a card or other kinds of things, like I said, an envelope or a business card. Very clever. I like it. It's called New Flash Visual Bill Transformation, and I recommend it. Well, there you have it. Another three for Thursday. Product reviews that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies that you can purchase from your favorite dealer. I always suggest that you go to brick-and-mortar magic shops and to patronize those while they're still open. There are so many reasons why that you can go and should go to a brick-and-mortar magic shop because you can actually ask questions. I mean, you can certainly see the presentations and videos online, but there's nothing like getting personalized instructions on how certain things work and actually put the things in your hand. But if there's not a brick-and-mortar magic shop near you, then I recommend, of course, to purchase them online. And I also suggest, of course, that if you don't purchase them through us here at themagicwordpodcast.com, that you should always go to our sponsor. And I want to thank them again this week for sponsoring us, and that's theperfecttrick.com. Thanks, Eric Citron, for sponsoring this program, and go check them out at theperfecttrick.com. That is going to be a wrap for this week, and I thank you guys once again for always tuning into the Magic Word Podcast. I know there are other podcasts out there that you can listen to that are magic-related also, but I always feel like that this one is just a little bit different from whatever else is out there. And I thank you guys for your patronage and for listening, and I hope that you will also share the magic by just kind of spreading the word to other people. Perhaps that you belong to a magic club, and that during the good and welfare time, it'd be a good opportunity for you to say, hey, that there's this cool podcast you guys ought to be listening to, that Scott Wells always is talking with some of the most interesting magicians in the world. And so anyhow, I would appreciate just kind of helping to share that with other people, so that way we can gain some more listeners. And also, as you listen to this, you might be thinking, well, how else can I contribute? Well, one way of doing it is, of course, just through the Facebook page. If you go to our Facebook page at the Magic Word Podcast, then you can join the conversation if you want to add something there to say, hey, I'd like for you to talk with this guy, or good job or bad job, whatever. I kind of like to hear from you then also. Of course, you can always leave comments at the bottom of any of the podcasts. There's a comment section here on the website, and then you can always send emails to me. That's scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. Well, that wraps up number 450. Wow, 450. So, until next week, and we're going to be having, again, some other celebrity magicians I think that you will enjoy hearing from, perhaps a second time, because the two guys I'm going to be talking to have both had their individual podcasts. We have had a chat with them in the past, and we're going to bring them back together one more time here, at least one more time, for another kind of combined conversation, because when the two of these guys got together, it was very funny also. So, and I don't want to spoil that. So if you are a member of our newsletter, you will learn about that. And again, to join and subscribe to the newsletter, absolutely free. And I promise I'm not going to be sending spam to your email. Just go over to, again, to themagicwordpodcast.com and go where it says on the tab, subscribe to the Magic Word. And down at the bottom of that page, whenever you get there, it'll say join our newsletter, and just fill out that information and we'll send it to you. So it comes out every Thursday, simultaneous with when the podcasts come out. But basically, it just kind of tells you who's on this week and who's on deck for next. So this way that you kind of get a sneak peek of who's coming up. So even though I won't tell you here, if you're a newsletter subscriber, then you'll know. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to smile. It makes people wonder what you're up to. This is Scotty out.